Well, good morning. Boy, the band sounded great, didn't they? Yeah, they're always amazing, but Jeffrey and the band just killed it. My name is Alex. I'm one of the pastors here, and we are in a series that we are calling Pop God, which where we are, we're taking popular songs, songs that are on the radio, that if you listen to Spotify or iTunes or wherever you listen to popular music, you might have heard these songs. Now, if you hadn't heard this one or you don't know who Shawn Mendes is, then you probably don't listen to popular music, and that's okay. But this song is currently number 7 on the Billboard pop charts. And Shawn Mendes, he started gaining popularity about 5 years ago. He was on this app called Vine. Anybody remember these 6-second videos you can make on Vine? It's no longer around, but he would start doing these cover songs. He got discovered, and then through that process got a record contract, and now he is huge. And in fact, after the service, I know my wife Denise did the announcements. She mentioned a photo booth. There's actually a Shawn Mendes head there. So if you want to take a photo with Shawn Mendes, you can do that today. In this song, though, this is a song that in an interview, Shawn Mendes said that In My Blood is probably the most autobiographical, the most real song that he's written. And he talks about the struggles that he has and how he feels during these struggles. And in case you didn't catch all the words, I just want to share some of the lyrics again. Listen to some of the words. Laying on the bathroom floor, feeling nothing, I'm overwhelmed and insecure. Give me something I could take to ease my mind slowly. Just have a drink and you'll feel better. Just take her home and you'll feel better. Keep telling me that it gets better, but does it ever? Help me, it's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up. No medicine is strong enough. Someone, help me. Those are some pretty heavy lyrics, aren't they? So welcome to the bridge. That's what we're talking about today. But here's the truth. Life Isn't Always Happy by Pharrell. Sometimes life is In My Blood by Shawn Mendes. And that's really what this series talks about. Scott kicked it off last week, and we're looking at a guy named Habakkuk. Say that 5 times fast. But he is a prophet from the Old Testament. He wrote the book of Habakkuk. And he lived around 600 BC in the country of Judah. And he was struggling because he looked all around himself. And everywhere he looked, he saw injustice. He saw wickedness. He saw evil. He saw just bad things. And as he looked around and he saw that, he was having difficulty lining it up to what he believed about God. He goes, you know, I know this is true about you, God, but here's what I'm experiencing and what I'm seeing. And so he wrestled with these questions. And it's interesting because his name, Habakkuk, actually means to wrestle or to embrace. And he wrestles with God over these questions. And there were questions like, and Scott talked a little bit about this last week, but it's when we're struggling, here's what we ask. Where are you, God? Why is this happening? And when will it end? And those are the same questions that Habakkuk had. Those are questions that we all struggle with during these times. And Scott shared one of the key learnings we get from Habakkuk last week is that you can be a committed Christian and have both questions and faith. They're not mutually exclusive. As a Christ follower, it's okay to have questions and you can tie that in and you can still have faith. And that is so freeing if you're a Christ follower, isn't it? Because I don't know about you, but for me, I feel like if I have questions like, where are you, God, and why is this happening, that somehow it means I'm less of a Christian, or I'm not a good Christian, I'm a bad Christian. And that can get me to feel like, well, then I don't want to ask God these questions, because if I ask God these questions, this might happen to me. Take a look. Right, exactly. And none of us want to have God Hulk smash us, right? So what do? We then have a tendency to hold our questions in and not to take them to God. And then that can make us want to feel like giving up. But another thing that Scott brought out last week is that our questions can actually not be a sign of weak faith. They may actually be a sign of growing faith. Having questions, wrestling with God, taking those questions to God, struggling with God, can actually be a sign of our faith is that it's growing. And Habakkuk asked all these questions. And God actually answered him. But it's interesting because he didn't get the answer that he wanted. What Habakkuk said is, okay, you want an answer? I do have an answer, Habakkuk, and here it is. You know the Babylonians? And the Babylonians, they were this nation that just a dominant force. They were just starting to rise to power around that time. But they would come into whatever country they took over. They would decimate the country. They would decimate the people. And God says, that's how I'm going to take care of the issue, the injustice and all the wickedness and things you're seeing. I'm going to send the Babylonians. And it rocked Habakkuk's world. It totally did. I mean, he's like, are you kidding me? This is what you're going to do. And it sent him into what Scott talked last week about was called the dip. Now, I keep referring to last week. If you weren't here last week, I'm going to cover some of this. But go to the website, thebridge.me/messages. You can watch it or you can download the message from our podcast. But he talked about something called the dip. And this is actually from a business book called by Seth Godin called The Dip. But it also has great spiritual applications. This pattern that we see ties into our spiritual faith. So we're going to talk about it all throughout this series. So I'm going to draw this thing again. And let me just kind of draw this first, and then I'll talk through it. All right, so what happens? We all start out here as non-Christians. And don't make fun of my handwriting, because it is not good. But we all start as non-Christians. Maybe you grew up in church, maybe you didn't grow up in church. But whatever your experience, everyone starts at the same spot. And maybe your experience in the past has been that, you know, Christians are hypocritical, or that's kind of been your thought or something. And so you're like, I don't want anything to do with them. But then you meet someone from work or from, you know, the gym or somewhere, and they're Christians, and they actually don't seem weird. They're not kind of just all over the place crazy. Right, and they seem fairly normal. They're kind of cool, and you start hanging out with them. You start having some spiritual discussions, and that intrigues you. And then they invite you to church, like on Easter. Maybe they invite you to the Bridge, and you actually come, and you're like, "Wow, that message seemed like it was geared right to me." And they play Shawn Mendes in church. Are you kidding me? That's pretty cool. And you keep coming back, and you keep coming back, and at some point, you decide up here that you're going to take a step of faith. You're going to trust Jesus, right? You're going to say, you know, I believe who you say you are, and I believe you did what you said you did, and I'm putting my trust in you. I don't know what all that means, but I'm going to put my trust in you. And you do what Scott said last week. You drink the Jesus juice. You drink deep, and it tastes good, and things are going well, right? You're coming to church, and every week the message is geared towards you. The music, it just resonates with you. You're praying, and God's answering. I mean, you pray for a parking spot to open up, and a parking spot opens up, and things are going well. Until at some point, they're not. And maybe you come to church one Sunday, and the message doesn't resonate with you for some reason. Or you come, and they're like, they're playing Shawn Mendes in church. Why are they playing Shawn Mendes in church? And then maybe you pray for something and it doesn't happen. And not only does it happen, but it gets worse. So you pray for a job, promotion, and not only do you not get the promotion, but you actually lose your job. Or you pray for a friend who's sick, and you ask for healing for them, and not only do they not get healed, but they get worse. And you get to a point here where you get to a crisis of belief. And this is where I had these beliefs about God and Jesus and things that were going on. And for some reason, my experience isn't matching up right now with that belief. And so it puts me in a crisis. And you have a few different options. One option is you can kind of go back. And you can say, no, everything's just great. You know, there's no issues. Hallelujah, everything's going well. And you know what we call that? We call that denial. I had someone once I was talking, he had family members around him who had cancer, and he just said, I don't believe in cancer. I know, but unfortunately, sometimes cancer believes in us, you know? I mean, I'm sorry, but that's denial. But you can go back, or you can give up. right? And you can say, you know, I don't know, maybe it was some kind of emotional thing that I was going through, but I'm going to walk away. However, Scott talked about if we push through, if we continue to trust, even when we don't see it, even when things aren't going well. Well, first of all, what happens is we enter this area right here, what it's called the dip of doubt. And it's just a place where, you know, it's where Habakkuk was. It's where pretty much the whole book of Habakkuk. He's there and he's struggling. What I see, God, and what's going on around me does not match up with what I know about you. And I have questions, and I'm struggling with questions. But if you push through, Scott said, this is kind of like a roller coaster where this, your momentum here, God wants to do something amazing in your life. He wants to use this dip. He wants to use this momentum to catapult you to greater areas of faith, a place of complete surrender, where you are mature and complete in your faith. And so this is kind of the pattern of Habakkuk. And it's interesting because you can take the book of Habakkuk and you can actually break it up into, there's three chapters and there's really three stages in the book of Habakkuk. The first one is what Scott talked about last week, and that is the wrestling. That's right, it's where we wrestle with questions, wrestle with God, wrestle with our faith. There's a second part here and there's a third part here. We're going to cover here for a second, but let me tell you, in the wrestling, we don't like the wrestling. We don't like when we're starting to enter this dip. We don't like all these questions. God, where are you? Why? How long? If you don't like stage one, you're definitely not going to like stage two. I don't like stage two. Habakkuk didn't like stage two. Shawn Mendes doesn't like stage two. None of us like to be in stage two. Listen to what Shawn Mendes, listen to how he puts it. Keep telling me that it gets better. But does it ever? Does it ever? Because see, here's the deal. When we're in the dip and we're praying and we're praying for healing or we're praying for a job or we're praying for our child who's struggling with addiction and we're just asking God to break that, whatever has you in the dip, here's the truth. We hate to wait. We hate to wait. But that's what the second stage is. It's the waiting stage. And here's interesting, when we get in this dip of doubt, when we start entering, right, we have questions of where are you, God? We have questions of why is this going on? Why is this happening? When you are at the very bottom of the dip, you only really care about one question. How long, God? How long and when am I going to get out of this thing? That you will trade the answer to any other question in life if you can just answer me this question. God, how long do I have to be in here? Why? Because we hate to wait. I remember iPhone first came out a little over 10 years ago. I remember the first time I saw an original iPhone. I was in a meeting in a room just over there, and our media director, Chris Estes, had the original iPhone. He's like the original Apple fanboy, and so he has everything Apple. He's going to sing its praises. Well, we were there, and we were talking about a video or something for service, and he pulls out his phone. He pulls out a video on his phone. And it was like magic. Like, are you kidding me? Because I had a cool Motorola Razr phone, right? And it flipped open, and it was super thin, and it was silver and shiny. It was cool. But this dude had a phone that, like, plays videos. It was crazy. If I had that original iPhone today, I think I would lose my mind. Because what takes about 1 second on my current iPhone, on the original iPhone, would take about 2 or 3 minutes to load. And I don't have that much time because the light's going to turn green before that pulls up. Okay, none of us actually do, right? We don't look at our phones, you know, at the stoplights, right? I mean, safety first, kids, right? Safety first. But we hate to wait. We hate to wait. I hate to wait at the grocery store. How many of you, is this your experience? You know, you buy this, you go to the store, you don't need a lot of things, but maybe 12, 13, like too much to go into the 10 items or less line, and you figure, okay, I'm not going to cheat this time, but you give the stink eye all those people that have, you're counting in their baskets, like they got like 15, 18 things, what's going on there? But you decide I'm going to go past that line and I'm going to be good this time and get in the regular line. And so I look for the shortest line. And once I get in this line, I start looking at like what's in the baskets ahead of me. And if I've got if I see someone who's got a huge full basket and then she starts pulling out coupons, like, oh, forget it. I am not staying in this lane, right? I find the other lane, I go to this next lane. But how many of you, if you do that, I'm not saying you do that, but if you do, how many of you then do this? You kind of start looking at who took your spot in the other lane. Because now I start getting in this passive aggressive like race with them to see who can get to the front of the line first. And if they beat me, in my mind, in my heart, I'm doing, no, God, why? Where are you, God? Why did this happen? Why? Because we hate to wait. Habakkuk hated to wait, too. He had been in the dip for a while when he wrote the book of Habakkuk. He'd been crying out to God. He asked all the questions, the whys, the where are you, everything that Scott covered. And he didn't get an answer that he liked. Right, the Babylonians, like, that rocks my world. I don't know about this God. So he asked God for clarity. And he's basically, you know, he's asking God, are they going to wipe us out? Are they going to conquer us forever? Basically, he's asking, how long, God? How long are we going to be in this dip? And he asked the question. And then at the beginning of chapter 2, this is what he writes. After he asks God this clarifying question, he says, I will stand like a guard to watch and place myself at the tower. I will wait to see what he will say to me. I will wait to learn how God will answer my complaint. So what he basically is saying, look, the tower was the highest part in the city and where you could see for miles. He's like, all right, I want to see your answer. I want your answer, God. Where is it? How are you going to respond to the how long question? Because that's all I care about now is how long. God answers Habakkuk again. Now, here's the thing. God doesn't have to answer Habakkuk. He doesn't owe Habakkuk anything. God is creator. Habakkuk is creation. But he answers Habakkuk. Why? One of the reasons he answers him is so that 2,600 years later, we can have an understanding of what to do when we're in the dip. And so here's God's reply. Here's how he starts off. The Lord answered me, write down the vision, write it clearly on clay tablets so whoever reads it can run and tell others. In other words, so clay is what they wrote in back then. So he says, hey, write this down, make it clear. I want everyone to know my answer. If he was living today, he might say, look, Habakkuk, put it on your Facebook wall. Tag all your friends. Tag Mark Zuckerberg. Tag whoever you need to tag. Tag Shawn Mendes. He's got a lot of followers. Whoever you need to, but I want everyone to know the answer to this. So what does God say to us when we're in the dip? What does he say? It is not yet time for the message to come true. But that time is coming soon. The message will come true. It may seem like a long time, but be patient and wait for it. Because it will surely come. It will not be delayed. And then he says, the evil nation is very proud of itself. It is not living as it should. That's the Babylonians. Hey, I'm going to take care of them. They're not living as they should. But those who are right with God will live by faith. So in this passage, in these few verses, God is telling us what to do when we are living in the dip. And this is what he says. When you're in the dip, be patient and wait for it. Who likes that answer? Anybody? Yeah, none of us do, right? Here, one of the struggles we have when we're in the dip is that we want a microwave God. And God is not a microwave God. God is more like an outdoor smoker kind of God, right? And so, you know, he takes his time when he's working with us and when he's working on us. So he tells Habakkuk, listen, I've got a vision. I've got a vision for you. I've got a vision for the nation of Judah. You can write it down. You can let everybody know because it will come true. Right? Take it to the bank. But if you want to know the answer to when, my answer to you is to wait for it. Wait for it. You know, but God, I'm single and I've been praying for a godly husband or a godly wife for years. Is it a yes? Is it a no? Like, I'm tired of struggling in this dip. And God says, wait for it. God, I've been trying to get pregnant for so long. Is it going to happen? I've got an answer for you, God says. But you need to wait for it. What about this job? I've been unemployed for so long. And God says, I have something for you. But wait for it. And that is not satisfying, right? That's not a satisfying. Can we be honest? If we can be honest in church, that's not satisfying when you're in the dip. That's not the answer we want to hear. But let me show you, because God is doing something, and let me just show you something. This right here, the dip, this shape, it looks a lot like a crucible. I put an image of a crucible up here on the screen. A crucible is a piece of equipment that is used to heat metals, to refine the metals, to burn out all the impurities, so then it can be poured into a different mold and reshaped. And that is what God is wanting to do in our lives in the dip. He wants to take out the impurities of our lives. He wants to refine us, and he wants to remold us and shape us into something different. And so if you are a Christian here in this room, let me tell you that it's not a question of if I will go into the dip. It's really a question of when will I go into the dip. Because every Christian goes into there. And the natural questions when we enter into the dip are all these stage one questions we asked about. Where are you, God? Why is this happening? God, how long? But when you get to stage two, when you get down here, God is inviting you to ask a different question. A question to help you in the refining process. And what God is asking, is inviting you to ask, is this question. Oh, this was the stage one. Let's go to the second one. What can I learn while I'm in this dip? What can I learn? God, what are you trying to show me? God, what are you trying to refine out of me? God, how are you trying to shape me into something different? Notice, here's the question isn't this. The question is not, what can I learn to get out of this dip? That's the question we want to ask. Right? Because we just want out. And this is just a way for us to try and control the process and trying to control God. Because if we can answer this question, that's really just trying to answer the how long, God, and how long is until I learn. And once I learn, and if I can figure it out, then I can catapult myself out of the dip. And that's not how God works. That's not how God works, right? Because if we're trying to do that, you know what God's response to you is? Wait for it. Wait for it. Let me show you verse 3 again from Habakkuk, just in a different translation. Just take a look, because it might clarify a little bit as well. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Here's what God's saying. I've got my iPhone. He has an iPhone. Sorry, Android people. He says, I have an app. I've got my calendar app on my phone here. And I have put the date that I am catapulting you out of the dip on my calendar. But you trying to figure out, like, what can I learn to get myself out of it? That's not going to work, because I am doing some deep work in your life. And you ask the question, you do want to learn in it, but it's not to get you out of it. It's because God's trying to do something in your life. I've got my appointed time. But wait for it. Wait for it. You know why we hate to wait? Geology. And some of you are like, okay, maybe I was tracking before, but I don't understand what does geology have to do with this. Some of you are about to check out because you only took one geology class in college. That was Rocks for Jocks, as you were told it was an easy A and you struggled to get a C in the class. And some of you here work in the oil and gas industry, and now I've got your attention. Because you're like, that's what I do. Like, yes, that's how I make my living. Give it to me. Some of you know, if you've heard me speak before, I love going to movies. I go about once a week. Well, there was a movie a few years back called The Shawshank Redemption. I know, great movie. In The Shawshank Redemption, the guy named Red, he has this quote. He says, geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it really takes, pressure and time. And you see that the elements are in the earth are under a significant amount of pressure. And this pressure, over time, can take these elements and change them into something different. In fact, it can change them into something like this. This is just a piece of coal. And coal is carbon that is put under a tremendous amount of pressure over a period of time. In fact, it usually starts off as like decaying plants that gets buried and buried and buried. And over time, with all the pressure and the time, you get a piece of coal. But coal, it's full of impurities, and it burns kind of dirty. But if you take the same element that you start out with to make coal, carbon, you bury it deeper in the ground. You put it under a greater amount of pressure for a greater period of time, you end up with a diamond. Now, just in case you're wondering, this is not a real diamond. The church budget does not allow us to buy the Hope diamond, but I think you know where I'm going with this. So both start out with the same material, carbon. What's the difference between the two? What's the difference between these two? Pressure applied over time. In fact, you could kind of say this, that a diamond is merely a lump of coal that did well under pressure. They both start out as carbon. But if you take a significantly more amount of pressure, more heat, and yeah, more time, you can go from something that's worthless to something that's priceless. And you see, that's what God's wanting to do with your soul. That's what he's wanting to do with you in your spiritual formation. That only happens in the dip, in those deep, dark places where your circumstances are heating up, where the pressure is on you, and where you are forced to wait so that God can do what? So he can draw those impurities out of you, so that he can refine you, and then he can take you and then forge you and mold you and shape you into something different. What's God's goal? What is he molding and shaping you to? What does he want to do? He wants to make you mature and complete. This is a verse that Scott shared last week. It's worth sharing again. It comes from the book of James, Jesus' half-brother. It says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers." All right, so I'm going to read it from here, but it's on the screen. "Consider it pure joy." Woohoo! Jesus juice, right? "Consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And let perseverance finish its work." That's wait. Wait for it. "Let the perseverance finish its work." Why? "So that you may be slingshotted and be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." Not lacking in anything. In our trials, in the dip, God hasn't stepped back. God is not surprised. God is not indifferent. He is actively working. He's got a goal. What's his goal? He wants to make you mature and complete, lacking in nothing. But here's the deal. To get to here, you have to go through here. You have to. This is why God tells Habakkuk, it is not yet time for the message to come true. But be patient and wait for it, because it will surely come. He's saying, look, Habakkuk, don't go back. Habakkuk, don't give up. Listen, it is in my calendar. I have it in its appointed time. It's good to go. You can write this down. Let everybody know about this. But you've got to persevere. Listen, I know you had your ideas. I know you have your plans. I know you have timing, and your timing isn't my timing. And I know you can't see my calendar. But wait for it. Trust me, because here's the deal. If you give up too soon and you don't let the pressure and the time do its work, your heart can get cold and bitter. And that is not my plan for you. It's not my desire. What I want is to grow you so that you are mature and complete, lacking in nothing. So how do we make it through the dip? What does Habakkuk say when we feel like we can't take the pressure anymore? What do we do? What did he say? Those who are right with God will live by faith. When you are struggling, hold on to God and live by faith. In other words, hey, keep trusting the God that has brought you here this far, right? Live by faith, not by sight. I read it once this way. Don't doubt in the dark what God has shown you in the light. Amen. Right? Don't doubt in the dark what God has shown you in the light. Listen, When God started working in your life up here, actually, he was working all the time here, but when you kind of get here and he's working, he's showing you who he is. He's showing you that he's real. He's showing you that he loves you. I mean, you're drinking the Jesus juice. But what was the goal? Mature and complete. Right? The goal is not for you to stay here drinking the Jesus juice, being a sippy cup Christian your entire life. Right? The goal is to get here. But unfortunately, for us, as we think about it, to get here, you got to go through here. That's the only way you get to here. Right? This is the catalyst that slingshots you to a higher level of faith. And so God shows you what he shows you things here so that when you are here, you can look back and say, I saw how God was working in my life, and I can't see it now, but when I was in the light, I could see it clearly. And so I'm going to trust that this God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and that he's got my back. Here's the challenge, though. It is so hard when we are at the bottom of the dip. When we're struggling, we have all those questions. You know, when I was 8 years old, I got very sick. I went to the doctor. I promise you, he took one look at me and told my mom, take him straight to the hospital. I went straight to the hospital. They thought I had leukemia. Now, back then, leukemia in an 8-year-old was a death sentence. They did tests, and luckily it wasn't leukemia, but they didn't know what it was. So they kept me in the hospital for over a month, and they kept doing tests upon tests upon tests. Finally, they did a very specialized x-ray, and in that x-ray, when the doctor saw the results, he started calling other doctors over, hey, come take a look, take a look, take a look. And my mom knew that was not a good sign. Doctors don't call other doctors over when it's a run-of-the-mill illness. And it turns out I had a pretty rare illness for a child my age at that time. And it was a chronic disease that I still have to this day have for the rest of my life. But coming out of that, for the next 7 years, I just got healthier and healthier and healthier. And we'd go to the doctor, and he'd take another x-ray and take another x-ray. And he was amazed at the changes in those x-rays where it was almost gone. And my mom just said, look, I don't know what you believe, what your faith is, but we've had a lot of people praying for Alex. And we believe that that has been making a difference in his life. And it had for 7 years. And then when I entered high school, I got sick again, and I got hospitalized again, and I entered the dip of doubt, because I'm a teenage boy, and for the next 3 years, I am in this dip where I am a little better, and then I'm worse, and then I'm better, and I'm worse, and I'm in and out of the hospital, and when I'm not in the hospital, I'm at home under home health care, and I'm had to withdraw from school, and just struggled, and I can remember being at the bottom of the dip, and I'm crying. And it feels like the walls are caving in. And I have all the questions, right? All the questions, the Habakkuk questions. I'd ask all those. But I could look back and see how God had been working in my life. And even though I couldn't understand it, I trusted the God that had gotten me there that far. And he got me out of it. He slingshotted my faith to a place that I it never could have gotten otherwise. Now, since that time, I'm not 100% healed. You know, I still have been hospitalized since then, and I've been healthier at other times since then. But here's the deal. I know where I'm headed, and I trust the one who's leading me there. Here's why I trust the one who's leading me there. You want to know why I trust him? Because he's been through this himself. You see, the Bible tells us that Jesus has gone through this same journey. Boy, for the first 31, 32 years of his life, right, it was kind of all up in this way. The Bible says that he grew spiritually, he grew emotionally, he grew physically, he grew socially. He gets baptized, the Holy Spirit, you know, falls on him like a dove. He gets 12, these 12 disciples that he calls, and people start flocking to him. People start following him. People start coming to him. And then probably at the pinnacle, he's got this one time where he's teaching. It says 5,000 men. There may have been 15, 20,000 people. We don't know the exact count. But he goes past lunch. He was a very engaging speaker. He goes past lunch. They start getting hungry. And so he takes this little boy's lunch of some fish and some bread. He multiplies it and he feeds all of those people and he has some left over. Right after that time, he starts teaching about having to suffer and having to go to the cross. And as he starts teaching that, people start leaving. Because they don't want to hear that, right? None of us want to hear that, hey, you might have to go into a dip. So people start leaving and start leaving. And he gets to this point where he's having dinner one night, and one of his closest friends, one of the 12, leaves to go and betray him. And when he leaves, he then takes the rest of his followers, those 12, or I guess the 11 at that point, and he goes to this garden to pray. And it says that he feels such grief, because now he's in the dip. It feels like the walls are caving in. It feels overwhelming to like the point of death. And he's still not at the bottom. And he's asking God, you know, the same questions we ask. Do I have to do this? I don't want this, God. Take this from me, please. Kind of, why, God? You know, and all these questions while he's there, all these prayers. And his friend comes back with the Roman soldiers. He gets arrested. He gets tortured. He gets spit upon. He's still not at the bottom. And then he gets put on a cross, right? And when he gets put on the cross, now he's at the bottom. And he cries out at the bottom, God, where are you? Why, God, why have you left me? And then he dies. And if that were it, we wouldn't even be here. But 3 days later, he rose from the dead. And it says he is now at the right hand of God the Father. And he's got a crown. But here's the deal. If he didn't persevere in the dip, if he didn't endure the cross, he wouldn't have embraced the crown. Because the pathway to here starts here, but it goes through here. That's for him, and that's for all of us. So when we are in the dip, when you are in the dip, when I'm in the dip, when we're asking, where are you? When we're asking, how long, God? The Bible says, look to Jesus. Right? Here's how it puts it in the book of Hebrews. Let us keep running the race that God has planned for us. What's that race? That's this path, right? That's this thing. Keep running this thing. Stay on it. Don't give up. And what do? We keep looking to Jesus. It says our faith comes from him, right? He started it, and he's got a goal. What's the goal? He is the one who will make it perfect. He wants you to go from here to here. He did not give up when he had to suffer the shame and die on a cross. Why not? Because he knew of the joy that was coming later. And now he is sitting at the right side of God. So what is it going to say? It says, so think of this so you will not get tired and give up. Look, God may be silent in the dip, but he is not absent. Right? Jesus has been there. He knows what you're going through. Why? Because he has gone through it himself. And so how do we make it through? We trust the one who has brought us there that we saw and knew was real at this time. But also we look at the joy that's set before us, where he wants to go. Right? And he will get you through it. Persevere. Don't give up. Why? Because God is working in the waiting. God is working in the waiting. He is using all of that heat, all of that pressure, and yes, all of that time to make you look more and more like Jesus. Persevere. Hang on. Don't give up. Wait for it. Let's pray.